Thank you, David. You make me think of a t-shirt that I bought at the end of last year, your Rotten Tomatoes reference, where it said 2020, and then it had 1 star out of 5, very bad year, would not recommend. And I think at least 2021 was maybe a 2 star. 2022, 3. Let's go for 3. I think it's going to be a 3. I wasn't planning on starting this way, but you might have seen in the news that Desmond Tutu died at the age of 90. And one of his quotes that I'd heard, something similar to this before, jumped out at me as I was looking at some information, and it seems appropriate for this talk. He said, "There comes a point when we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they're falling in." And it's probably lucky. You notice, like, Rod didn't share what the talk title was. Chris had emailed me earlier this week saying, "Hey, I'm doing the newsletter early. What's your talk title?" And I sent it to her, but then I noticed it wasn't in the newsletter. And email has been kind of weird lately, so I think it didn't make it to her. And I thought, well, if it had, there'd probably be like half the number of people here. Because the title I have is, "I Really Don't Care, Do You?" Oh, I know, right? Oh, man, you know, David's like, "I'm out of here." I like to be a contrarian sometimes, so and explore like the edges and the opposite of what we assume is the best thing. So that's where that comes from, as well as you probably recognize that as a very controversial jacket that was worn a few years ago. So I'm glad that it actually wasn't published, because you're here, and I get to explain myself. So a few weeks ago, I had a really important meeting. Of course, it was on Zoom, and it was with some colleagues. And I went into that meeting with some expectations. I thought that certain things were going to happen, that certain things would be said or shared, and that we would accomplish important stuff. And as it turns out, very little of what I expected actually happened. And I left that meeting frustrated. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 9:30, I was downstairs in my kitchen rearranging the utensil drawer. You know, we all have that drawer where it's like kind of chaos. And it had been chaos for years, and I'm like, I'm sick of it, I can't live with it anymore, I'm gonna rearrange it. And so I was sort of taking out some of my frustration on the kitchen utensils. And my husband wishes that I would get frustrated more often, because that means I would do more of that sort of thing. But as I was doing that, as I was kind of stewing and replaying that meeting in my mind, I realized I cared too much. I care too much what the other people said and did, what they didn't say, and what they didn't do. And that realization was followed by another. I could choose not to care. I mean, I cared about what we were working on. I cared that we're able to make a difference in the lives of people, a difference in the world through the work that we were doing. And certainly in that meeting, we did make some progress. And there were people who, they were good people who did care. But having certain expectations and certain attachments, and having those expectations not met, led to frustration and disappointment after an otherwise productive meeting. And as I mentioned before, that entire incident led me to remember Melania's jacket from a few years ago when she went to the southern border. "I really don't care, do you?" And we were all rightfully shocked by that sentiment, especially in the context of going to see families being torn apart by cruel immigration policies. But even before that, and in general, we tend to frown upon the phrase, "I don't care." It's dismissive, it lacks compassion, it can have an air of superiority depending on the tone, and it can be unkind. It also maybe shirks responsibility or accountability. Or we think the person who says it doesn't have a conscience or is self-centered. On the other hand, when we say, "I care," we're expressing love, hope, concern, and even selflessness. As came up in the pre-talk this morning, it is an expression of our values when we say we care about something. And so if there's a choice between caring and not caring, we are pretty much conditioned to err on the side of caring. And just as there are lots of reasons to care, we also learn that there are reasons not to. as we mature, we start to figure out that caring can hurt. If we care about what others think, we might start to shut down our own originality and our creativity. If we care about acceptance, we might start to hide parts of our personality, or even worse, our identity, so that we can fit in. And we can care about a person who disappoints us and get our hearts broken. I hadn't quite thought about it in these terms before reflecting on this talk, but bringing more nuance to my caring has been at least a decade in the making. There have been two phrases that have transformed my relationship with myself and with everyone in my life, and those are the two things I want to share with you this morning. And they both have to do with not caring, or at least not caring so much. The first is internally oriented and related to expectations and attachments. And I actually learned it about 15 years ago from the best boss I ever had, Marcia, when I worked in Traverse City. And that phrase is, I'm open to outcome, not attached. I'm open to outcome, not attached. It's a variation on the way of the teacher, and it comes from a book called The Fourfold Way, Walking the Paths of the Warrior, Teacher, Healer, and Visionary, and it's by Angelus Arian. It's one of the most freeing ideas, and it will absolutely change your life if you choose to embrace it. And it's not always easy, because as I said, we are conditioned to care. And that care leads us to setting goals, to having outcomes, to having expectations, and measures of success. This is not to say that there's anything wrong with goals, because they motivate us and they focus us on something that is important to us. But where it goes sideways is when we get too attached and care too much about a particular outcome. Laser focus does have its benefits, but it also has its limitations. It makes our world a little, and sometimes a lot, smaller. What would be different if we set a goal that was important to us, that we really wanted, and we knew why we wanted it? Then what if we start living and making choices in support of moving towards that goal, but we let go of attachment to the outcome? If we let the process evolve, but most of all, we let the mystery of life be part of the adventure. After all, who here hasn't ended a day completely bewildered and astounded by what happened during that day that you never could have predicted that morning? Those are some of my most memorable days. And that's the fun and sometimes the tragedy of life. That's the benefit of being open and not attached. You can go along with the inevitable plot twists and have more humor and ease and creativity and flexibility. You care about what's happening, but you don't care so much that what's happening isn't what you expected. And that reminds me of the definition of conflict that I learned when I went through mediation training. Conflict is when what happens Conflict is what happens when you thought what would happen doesn't. I hope I said that clearly enough. If I have my heart set on getting a red hat and I get to the store and all they have is brown, then I experience conflict. My desire doesn't match my reality. If they have a red hat, then there's no conflict. Unless that red hat is really ugly, then I have a decision to make. But being open to outcome and not attached, that allows me to see the gorgeous red scarf that is hanging right next to the boring brown hats. It opens up possibility. Now, the second mantra that's helped me over the years is externally oriented, and it's more about our relationship with other people. And it is also a game changer. And I have a really good story to illustrate this. It was a really rainy afternoon, maybe about 7 years ago, when we still lived in Tacoma, and I was driving into Seattle for a networking event when Andy, my husband, called me on my cell. I answered, and I listened to his voice, and I heard a little bit of panic. Now, remember, we only had one car at the time. And he said, something unexpected has come up, and he needed the car for an off-site meeting. And since I was in the car, driving up I-5 at 65 miles per hour in the opposite direction from him, he clearly had a problem. There was a time when I would have just sighed and said, I'll be right there, and gotten off at the next exit and turned around. He had called me with a problem, and I cared about him. I had to save the day, right? I would have felt mildly annoyed, but in some twisted way, virtuous for having come to his rescue and fixed his problem. And of course, the strong introvert in me would have said, oh darn, no networking event today for me. But that's not how the story ends. I listened to his description of the situation and said, oh dear, I am really sorry to hear about that. How else can you get to the meeting? I can tell, by the way, some of you are responding that you would be like, oh, I don't know about that. We brainstormed for just a few minutes, and he said, I'll figure it out, and we hung up. And honestly, I forgot about the conversation until we got home that evening, and we talked about, so how did you get to your meeting? Now, this might not be a big deal for some people. They'd be like, well, yeah, of course, you know. But for me, it was really a true turning point because it was an opportunity to put into practice something that I learned early on in my coach training, which is integral to being able to be a coach and to sit with people and be witness and guide to people who are going through huge challenges sometimes. And that is to see and hold others as whole, capable, and resourceful. I wrote a post about this on LinkedIn. I called it Three Little Words That Will Change Your Life Forever. And within, it somehow got picked up by the LinkedIn editors, and within maybe a week, it had like 500,000 views, had more than 1,000 comments, 1,000 shares. It had clearly struck a nerve. And some folks got it immediately. They got this idea of whole, capable, and resourceful, and they immediately transferred that concept to themselves as partners and spouses and bosses and especially parents about this, I don't need to rescue my child. But another group, a small group, was almost angry. They thought that I didn't care about what happened to Andy. They said, I'd turn around no matter what. And some of them, they were so convinced that I wasn't caring about him, they sort of read the story in a warped way, and I had a few comments of people saying, I never would have left my husband on the side of the road in the rain. And I'm like, when did I ever say that I did that? He was in his office, safe and dry, with colleagues that had cars and a light rail and, you know, all sorts of things. But for some reason, they decided that I was a villain because I didn't just immediately drop everything and turn around. What I hope to share with them and what I want to share with you is that that kind of approach of holding someone else whole, capable, and resourceful allows you to experience a healthier, more functionable, and sustainable caring. Instead of rescuing or fixing or being the martyr, you care about the whole person. You believe in their capacity to solve their problems or to ask for help or to get to a good place. And you can be a supportive presence and demonstrate respect and trust. It doesn't mean you don't help. You just don't rescue the person if they don't need to be rescued. If I choose to hold someone else as whole, capable, and resourceful, I see them not as a person to rescue, but a person to respect. Not broken, but healthy. Not helpless, but self-reliant. Not clueless, but creative. So when I listened to Andy and didn't offer to swoop in and make it all better, I was actually respecting his capacity to solve his own problem. I was reminding him in so many words that he can take care of himself. I can offer support and a sympathetic ear, but I don't have to abandon my own priority to take care of his. I trust that he can handle it. And what I've noticed is that awareness, he trusts that I can handle it too. I don't expect him to rescue me. It causes me to see myself as whole, capable, and resourceful. So my first call isn't help, help, you know, save me. And I can imagine some of you might be thinking, yeah, that would work with a person who has it together. But it wouldn't work for my crisis-oriented or super needy brother or coworker or mother-in-law. And I'll grant you this, there are some people who have certain life challenges that may make it seem difficult, if not impossible, for you to see them as whole, capable, and resourceful. Try anyway. Find ways to see past the surface issues and speak to their higher self, the one that longs to be respected and cherished and to be seen as capable. Discern what's going to serve the situation best. Sometimes a rescue will be required. But always question that assumption. Because that is part of the bottom line. When we treat others with dignity and respect, they often rise to the occasion, whether they believe in their own capacity or not. Your belief in them inspires a belief in themselves, and this allows you to care, to be present and compassionate without giving away your power. I love it when I'm reflecting on a particular idea, like I was this talk, and something crosses my path that, you know, illustrates it perfectly. And this comes from pop culture. A friend of mine recommended watching Gilmore Girls. Is anybody else here a Gilmore Girls fan? I'm like, what took me so long? This is so fun. And I've been slowly making my way through the series. I'm on episode one, season five now. And I was watching an episode on Friday, and I heard this really interesting exchange between two of the characters, both of them men. And they were talking about a family member. What do we do? About what? About them. We have to do something about this. Like what? She's going to do what she's going to do. No, I do not accept that. We can go to her together. We can tell her. We have to fix this. I cannot watch her throw her life away with a loser again. You see, this is your problem. You're going to help people whether they want it or not. You have to fix everything. You have to fix everyone. You think it makes you a good guy, but really, it just makes you a pain in the ass. You make it so that when people fail you, you get to feel like the martyr. And you get to feel like not only did they screw up, but they also disappointed you. You interfere and you make everything worse. No one is asking for your help. No one wants your help. Focus on your own life and leave everyone else alone. It's a bit harsh. And it's a bit harsh because there's some wisdom and truth in that. And that's why I think this is a really important point to think about how we're expressing our caring and how we justify our caring. In this case, we can justify it by saying, I'm a good person. I help people. I'm doing it out of love. I don't want them to suffer or fail or be disappointed or get hurt or be left on the side of the road in the rain. But when we overfunction in our caring, we risk smothering others and burning ourselves out. Every strength that we have, every value that we have, can be stretched to an extreme. And instead of being positive, it can turn into a saboteur. And it brings me to this community. You know, we as a community value compassion. And in these times that we are born for, there are limitless opportunities to exercise compassion. Just in the pre-talk, we ticked off probably 10 or 20 different things that are asking for our attention, asking for our caring and our compassion. We are asked at every turn to help someone, to give money, to be the hero. And there is so, so much to care about, which means there are so, so many opportunities to overfunction and care so much that we risk crossing over into overwhelm and burnout and anxiety and a sense of helplessness. We also risk coming too much from our ego, the part of us that wants to feel a sense of purpose and even importance. And as we've learned in here many times, our ego is not a bad thing. So I'm not dissing our ego. It's just that when it becomes our primary motivation for something, that's what can happen when we overfunction and we get into that fix-it mode. We can even project our caring tendencies outward so much that we neglect our own self-care or care of the people that are closest to us. Our caring activities can keep us so busy and so purposeful and feeling so important that we are able to temporarily avoid dealing with some sort of grief or loss or conflict. Now, it's easier to strike a balance with our internal caring what other people think. When it comes to that, I think I crossed some sort of threshold back in September when I turned 50, because I care a lot less than I used to. I find that I'm more easily able to discern what's worth caring about and what's not. And that's talking about, like, you know, what people might think of me. I can let go of what's not important, like I did with that meeting that I told you about at the start of this talk. And I can make an important distinction between caring about what other people think and considering what others think. That consideration that I give, that reflection or contemplation, it might lead to caring. But then again, it might lead me to decide not to care. at least I've considered someone else and made a choice. And that feels very different than just blanket saying, I don't care. It's more difficult to let go of caring so intensely about the people and situations around us. And please don't hear me as saying that we should just give up and not have a care in the world. I'm not suggesting we don't care. I'm suggesting that we care enough to see and hear someone and support them as best we can while still respecting their autonomy and dignity. I'm saying that we direct our caring towards honoring someone else's spirit and light. We do what we can to walk alongside someone rather than drag them down the path that we think is best for them, all the while saying we're doing it because we care about them and love them. And it takes time to build this muscle. Start by noticing when you jump into rescue mode and practice solving the problem with, not for, the other person. Gradually release any feeling of responsibility for their solution and instead focus on how you can create a space that empowers the other person to figure it out. And it might be tenuous, but here's the connection to being born for these times. There is so much to care about, and it sometimes feels like there's a new crisis every single day. If we are going to have the energy for the long road ahead in these times that we live in, we have to be mindful of where we give the gift of our care, how much of that gift we give, and who we give it to. Otherwise, we might lose steam too early, and it will all become too heavy, and we will collapse under the weight of it all. And that sounds a bit dramatic, but it's a very real possibility. Maybe some of you have experienced that, even for just a moment, where you feel that it's all too much. And we can avoid that if we cultivate self-awareness about our own caring. And so in the spirit of that cultivation, I'm going to leave you with a few questions. Since Kent's not here to ask questions, I will try to do that. What and who do you care about? Why do you care? What are you attached to or expecting? How will you feel if that expectation isn't met? Where is that caring coming from? Is it coming from your heart, your ego, a habit, a choice? What would be different if you didn't care so much, or if you didn't care at all? What would it be like to be open to outcome, not attached? How would I be with this person differently if I saw them as whole, capable, and resourceful? And I think over the past 2 years, we've had to learn a lot about being open to outcome, not attached, because setting outcomes inevitably has not led to our expectations being met. And I brought with me, it was like December 29th, 2019. And for those of you who are here, you might recall I had postcards out in the foyer there, in the lobby, and ask you to write down what was something you wanted to let go of from 2019, and what was your intention for 2020. And it is not pretty, but I put what I got here on this board, and I'm seeing to be present, be more positive. Look for the opportunity to make a difference in government. More movement and walks, water, travel with family and friends. Sorry about that. Take more chances on myself, mindfulness, to be more brave in expressing myself, along with doing the best thing. Be open to new ideas, people, truth. Generous interpretation of thoughtful action, inaction, words. Finding the peace in all I do, more community, focus on being in the moment. Put myself as number one for health, and then I can't read the next word, and being in the present moment. Release need for answers. I really hope that person got what they wanted with that. Release the need for answers. So all of these things, these intentions, these are more powerful than goals in some ways, because these can be true. You can let go of attachment to how these are going to look. And you can be more present with the energy that they bring. And I'm going to leave this right here. And maybe if you recognize your handwriting, you can come and see, what did I say 2 years ago about what I was going to do? And even think about, even though that's not the point of this talk, think about what do you want to release from this year? What do you want to release in terms of your expectations for 2022? What do you want to be open to with all of that? Carl Jung concluded that as far as we can discern, the sole purpose of human existence is to kindle a light in the darkness of mere being. You don't have to stamp out the darkness. Simply be the gentle light that shines on the brilliance of others so they can discover it for themselves. And that's the essence of true heart-centered caring. So with that, I hope you'll join us for Talk Back. I'd love to hear what you thought. And I'm so glad to be here with you today. And happy holidays and happy new year. Thank you.